Islands.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
The Revolution of Juan McCartney is sponsored by J.S. Johnson, Burger King, Commonwealth Bank, Boost Academy, and Wendy's.
Good afternoon and welcome to The Revolution. My name is Joey Gaskins and I am sitting in for Juan McCartney, who I believe is on vacation. It's good to be here. Happy Friday. And as Levon said, as I was walking in and he was walking out, it's good to be out of retirement. You know, I haven't been on the radio in quite some time. Nahaja had me on, I think that was last week or week before last, and she made a big show out of the fact that I've been absent from the airwaves, television and radio for some time. But when someone like Juan or Nahaja calls you, you know, and says, come, let's go, you don't have a choice but to show up. So I am happy to be here today. And I tried to put together a little show that's not as controversial as maybe you guys are used to, but I think will be interesting. It'll be edifying. And it has to do with an industry that is our second most important industry, but often isn't talked about quite a bit. We talk about tourism a lot. We talk about tourism investment a lot, cruise ships, hotels being built. But today I wanted to shine a particular spotlight on financial services, on finance and investment here, domestic and abroad. So we have some really interesting guests to get to today. But before that, I'm looking at the headlines and I know people are really concerned. You know, all the headlines today seem to be about the public health crisis. There are videos floating around of leaks in hospital roofs. I got that this morning. Health workers staging sick outs, given that they've not received promised honorariums, and the hope of herd immunity. I know the government is trying to do a yeoman's task of beating back misinformation around vaccination, beating back some of the suspicions around vaccination to get Bahamians vaccinated. There's a lot going on around us. And I think that this is something important that we got to take a pause for a second and maybe talk about. You guys may know the lines. You may know the text lines. You may know the call lines. But in case you don't, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. Those are our call lines. And you can feel free to text us at 422-GR96 or 422-4796. And I want to hear about, before we get started with our guests, how you guys are feeling about the current health crisis, how you guys are feeling about what's going on the ground. I think it's really interesting because I just left New York. I was there up until yesterday. And New York is open, man. You know, New York is, the clubs are open until, telling on myself, the clubs are open until 5:30, 4:30 in the morning. Restaurants are open. People are wearing masks. I was actually quite surprised. I was in a food store on Tuesday. I want to say 99% of people in that food store had their masks on. And this is in a city, in a place where people are highly vaccinated. You know, you have 70% of the population, 65% of the population, 70% of the population vaccinated. Folks are still wearing masks. They're still trying to be careful. They are still sanitizing when they walk into stores. So it was quite interesting. And I felt, you know, even though it's a big city, it's diverse, I felt pretty safe. Here at home, we seem to be going through a third wave, right? And people are talking about, you know, illness, family members being sick, and yet we're still having the debate around vaccination. Should we get vaccinated? As the government brings in more vaccines, provides more resources for us to, as they said today, hopefully get to herd immunity by Christmas. So, you know, I'm just juxtaposing the two experiences. You'd think you'd feel less safe in a city as crowded as New York City. But I gotta admit, coming home, I was worried. You know, coming home, given the infection rate of 20%, 25% in our communities, I felt more worried about being here in Nassau than I did in New York City. So we've got a ways to go. We've got a lot of work to do. And I'm just wondering, you know, how are folks feeling about this? What are we hearing about vaccinations in our community? Are you vaccinated and concerned that folks around you aren't getting vaccinated? Are you absolutely refusing to get vaccinated? Let me know why. I find that when I got vaccinated here at home, the process was simple. Technology worked perfectly. I showed up to Bahamar. I was in and out in a matter of minutes. You know, you have to wait those 15 minutes or so after you take the shot. You have to hang out just to make sure nothing adverse happens to you. You don't have an adverse reaction. But it was pretty simple. And what was really interesting was, and so I printed out my you know, you get a vaccination certificate of sorts in your email that you can download to your phone after you're done here at home. And I printed that out. I actually came here to the Nassau Guardians building. I got it printed and laminated. I keep that in my wallet. And as I went to bars in New York City where they were still asking folks, you know, put your number down in case of contact tracing. Can we see if you've been vaccinated in order to let you into this space? They thought it was the most brilliant thing ever to have this laminated card that showed that you were vaccinated. They thought that that was brilliant. I was surprised because I thought that would be the norm there. But they were really excited by the fact that I had this proof in my wallet. And so I think we are trying to do a really good job here at home. I think the system works here in the Bahamas. The question is just, are people interested in going through the system? Again, our call lines, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4256. And if you want to text us, that's 422-GR96, 422-4796. Feel free to shoot us a text message. I see a light blinking here. Do we have a call on? Sure, go ahead, caller. You're on the Revolution.
Hello?
Hey.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you live.
Okay, good afternoon. I didn't get your name.
Oh, Joey Gaskins.
Oh, okay, Joey.
Yes, how are you?
I missed it for a little while, but Joey.
Yeah.
Let me say welcome back, and I understand Shawnee Miller-Weibo and Stephen Gardner came in yesterday.
That's right.
Yeah, and I just want to tell them, or if anyone know them, to let them know, coming from Pawpaw, the blind one, how much I appreciate and the country appreciate what they do, what they did.
Mm-hmm.
And I know money could never be enough, but I just wish it be a way that we could show them how much we appreciate them. And, you know, I encourage the government and business owners and investors and stuff like that in the country, and maybe the Ministry of Tourism,
mm-hmm.
to use these people, you know, to advertise the Bahamas, you know. Not for free. I mean, like, they can
yes.
make monetary gains, because what they do, they make all us feel good. Also, I wanted to say the question you asked with the health, how we feel about the health sector and stuff right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good question.
Mm.
And I wanted to say you just come from New York. I listen to the news all over the world, especially in America.
Mm-hmm.
I hear for some time now, these 18 months we've been going through this COVID America in the Bahamas, 18 or 16 months, I believe. I hear with companies and some business people, they doing for these frontline workers, you know, along with the government. Right now, the people complaining that the government ain't give them nothing. They being on frontline from that time, risking their life and their family life and stuff like that.
Right.
I know business people going through a lot of hell right now financially. But some of the business people have been doing good from that time, making billions and millions of millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And they're still making millions of dollars right now with the COVID. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to say to you, since you asked the question, I just feel like we should do more as a people and the government, encourage the government and help the government and some of the people who are making money.
Yeah.
If we could do some things for those nurses and doctors mm-hmm. and the police officers and stuff like that, the people who work in the laundry department at the hospital and mm-hmm. stuff like that, the people who cry in the day, people who ain't going to work because they ain't feel like they're being treated right.
Yeah.
The government only could do so much, I understand, and they're maybe the ones who get the most of the money. But if we come together as a people, especially these business people like I talk about, who pay me, I mean, there's so much things we could do for these frontline mm-hmm. workers different from just giving them cash, you know.
Right.
Some of them go into hell. Some of them are family members. Mm-hmm. We could pay for certain things. We could give them. We own grocery stores.
Yeah.
We own all kind of things. We, you know, vacations and stuff. We could look out for them more. I just think that's what we need to do. Mm-hmm. And this bunch of foolishness will be going through right now with this COVID, this judgment.
Yeah, I hear you.
For the good work.
I hear
Joey.
You. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. So two things. One, yes, absolute, overwhelming congratulations to Shawnee and to Stevie. I actually, when I flew in yesterday, I flew in into the middle of the celebration that they were having at the airport. It was packed. There was John Canoe. It really made me feel happy. I've known Stevie for a while, and it was great to see him run the way that they both ran. No question about the win this time around. And I do think that as a country, we can do a bit better, not just supporting our athletes, but also leveraging their amazing performance on the global stage to benefit all Bahamians. And yes, so the other question is, what can we be doing? And you're right, you know, are there ways for us to be supporting frontline workers who are not just doctors, by the way? I mean, let's think about it. People who work in food stores, for example, right, who are stocking shelves are subject to greater exposure, right? But they're keeping food on the shelves for us, right? What can we be doing as a community, to support our frontline workers? This is a key question that I think we need to be asking. We got a couple of text messages as well. Great show as usual. I have intentions on getting vaccinated, and I wish people in food stores will refrain from being 6 inches to my personal space and stay 6 to 13 feet away from me. Great show as usual. I am disgruntled to the fact that the citizens of Nassau is at the point they are, quote, numb to murders, and that's not normal or good for a country. What do you think is wrong with people? I mean, apathy may be one of the big things driving the slow uptake of vaccinations here. You know, I think government and public health officials have been making the argument that it's not just about you. It's not just about your family. It is about our community. It's about getting the economy back up and running. And I'm not sure those arguments are sticking. And I'm not sure people see themselves as being a part of the solution. I'm not sure that people understand that we are all in this together. And so that may be one of the issues that we may have. Hi, Joey. I am not vaccinated. I have two questions. Why are insurance companies unwilling to pay claims if something happens after you take the jab? And why are vaccinated people so worried about unvaccinated people? These are good questions. I also think that we have a bit more work to do around educating folks around the difference between vaccinated and unvaccinated. For us, and for me, one of the key reasons why I got vaccinated was because I travel so much, right? But the other thing is, you know, I'm very concerned about health infrastructure. I'm very concerned about the longer effects of COVID-19 and the fact that we have a public healthcare system that we all should be contributing to. And we are just learning about this disease. We're just learning about this virus. And we're not sure what those longer effects are going to be and the toll it will take on our societies. I'm concerned about the longer effects on mental health and for kids, who some of whom have never been in school, right? Only know virtual school. They're not out playing with friends, and we know how important play is to development, right? And they can't go out and play with friends, right? So I'm thinking about some of the longer term effects. And we're hearing that, you know, yes, if you're vaccinated, you may be able to pass on an infection. But we know that vaccination reduces the length and severity and reduces the chance of catching it, right? But I think we've got a lot of work to do around vaccination education. We really do. Let's see what else. Hi, all of this pandemic is causing division. One person says, I'm not inclined to get vaccinated at least for another 2 years. Simply put, there hasn't been enough testing and evaluation on these vaccines. From the vaccine rollout begins, every country's administration has sent out misleading information, like vaccinated people didn't need to wear masks. Again, this is something happening in real time. You know, we don't have an experience like this in our modern history. You know, this is something that we've never experienced before, at least not in the last 100 years. And so there is a bit of a learning curve. I understand people's hesitation and frustration, which is why I think, you know, large-scale vaccination education efforts are going to be key for people to understand what all of this means. It looks like we have another caller on the line. Caller, you're live. This is The Revolution. Go for it.
All right. Hello. Good afternoon, Joey.
Good afternoon.
Charles Hamilton calling in.
Hi, Charles.
I am doing okay. I guess in terms of how things are operating right now in the Bahamas, I really would encourage people to get vaccinated. I understand the COVID fatigue that our people are hearing, and I understand the trust deficit that people may have. But I reflect on seeing some of the issues that are also happening in our in the global north. Mm-hmm. Some of my close friends in Canada who are younger people can't get vaccinated. Some persons who I know that live in parts of Europe that are younger persons can't get vaccinated. Mm-hmm. We're seeing persons fighting to be able to get vaccines. I think it was in Bangladesh or in Nepal, where just the vaccine supplies are so low and the death rates are so high, mm-hmm. and people are trying to break down the gates to try and get these vaccines. At the end of the day, now that we have a bit more choice, we see the AstraZeneca is here, we see the Pfizer is coming, and we see that Johnson & Johnson should be in soon. I really want people to reflect that the vaccine is not meant to be a cure. The vaccine is meant to be a tool in our toolkit to mm-hmm. be able to ensure that our health system does not collapse. Mm-hmm. I lost a family member recently, and the reality is that when I looked at the obituary section yesterday, they had to do an overflow into the main section of the mm-hmm. Guardian because mm-hmm. so many people are passing away, not just only because of COVID, but because they're unable to be able to access the healthcare system because it's overrun. People who need to be able to get elective surgery, people mm-hmm. who need to be able to get their screenings that they need to be able to get at the hospital, people who need to be able to follow up with medical issues that just can't access it because the hospital is overwhelmed. If you don't want to do it for yourself, think about your family members, think about the community members, and just think about the fact that having access to things like this is a privilege that many countries around the world do not.
Yeah.
And I really hope that our team will take advantage of this opportunity and, you know, talk it over. Mm-hmm. Talk it over with your friends. Talk it over with your family. And just know that it's going to take a little bit more time for us to get through this. But I think if we can just work together, try to, you know, cut through a lot of the chatter and just work together, I think it's that we'll be able to do something more. So thank you for dwelling on this conversation today. Welcome back. And, stay safe, everyone.
Thanks. Thank you for that. Like I said, this is just the first segment. You know, we're going to pivot to something a little different, but I thought it was important given the headlines today to talk about this. My concern, you know, if you know me and if you followed me, you know that I'm a policy guy. I'm a government guy. I'm a politics guy.
If you'd like
for me, you know, the question around healthcare infrastructure is key. And I think, you know, while there's a lot of focus on COVID-19 specific, like the caller pointed out, if our hospital beds are full of COVID-19 patients, right, what about the person who gets into a serious accident tonight? What about folks who need consistent hospital care because they have some kind of chronic illness? And so, yeah, we talk about, and of course it's top of mind for us, the conversation around COVID-19, but we forget that when we talk about bed capacity, We mean bed capacity. We mean healthcare infrastructure capacity, not just for COVID-19. There's not a room, you know, on the side of the hospital or a building on the side of the hospital just for these folks that are running out of space. We are talking about space for all of us. Life happens, right? And if we don't have the space to take care of folks, and I'm not even talking about elective stuff. I'm not talking about the things that, you know, you may need to do, but you could put it off for a little while. I'm thinking about folks who require hospital care on a regular basis. That's what we're talking about. And then finally, you know, we can stand outside our homes and applaud these healthcare workers all we want, but they're doing, again, a yeoman's job, right? A yeoman's task. They are working it day and night. And I am friends with a number of young physicians, young nurses who are really putting their everything into this. And how long can we expect them to do that, especially given some of the conditions that have been described over the course of this public health crisis that they have to work with and work in, right? We are faced with, you know, quite a significant task ahead of us. And I understand people's confusion. I understand the hesitation. I understand that people are, not knowledgeable about the science. But one, like the caller said, vaccinations are not the end-all and be-all. They are a tool in the toolbox. And two, I do think that we have, and when I say we, I'm talking about us as a society, we have a long-term task of getting ourselves together on this, of educating each other on this, and being understanding, you know, and understanding why people may be hesitant and making an effort to bring them on side. One caller says, one text messenger says, I think it makes sense to clarify that vaccination does not mean that you will not catch COVID, but it minimizes the viral load that you spread and reduces the severity. We have to do it to protect our kids and immunocompromised people. Another text, the healthcare system has been broken for a while. I was there in 2009 when the doctors were striking because they wanted to be able to go abroad for care. It was horrible. It was a horrible time, and I lost my daughter due to negligence. And I read a story of another young lady this year who had an almost identical experience. Some people are not meant to be in healthcare, and there are some, if they were meant to be, some who are not meant to be in the field. These people need to be rewarded and held as an example. Absolutely agree. Folks are chiming in. At an alarming rate, actually, on the text message. Question, if 5 years from now, a person suffers side effects from the COVID vaccination, who do you use the government or the, who do you blame, the government or the manufacturer of the vaccine? That's a really good question. I don't know. But it is something, again, that people are asking, and I guess we need to figure out answers for this. We have a current crisis. Perhaps people don't feel like it's touching them, that the present is less severe than others, than the future, than they can imagine the future being. But a lot of questions about what happens next, what happens in the future. Question, why do vaccinated people in Nassau think they can't spread or catch COVID? That's, again, a good question. When I talk about vaccination education, I'm not just talking about people who don't want the vaccine, you know. That's the other thing. Where people who are not vaccinated, I think those of us who are vaccinated need to understand what the limitations of that might be as well. I really want to get to my guests. They've been waiting on Zoom for quite some time. I knew this was going to be a hot topic. But I didn't realize people were going to jump on this the way they did. I'm going to take one more caller, then we can go to break, and we're going to pivot to the directors of the Ministry of Financial Services, Trade, and Industry to talk about something that is COVID-related, by the way, right? That economy in our economy is currently suffering under the weight of a global pandemic. And we talk about tourism a lot, but this is one industry that has kept on pushing. And I want to highlight that industry today. So one more caller. We'll go to a break, and then we'll bring on the directors. Caller, you are live. This is The Revolution.
Yes, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon. How are you?
All right, good. I like what one of the texts said. Why are persons who are vaccinated, why are they so gung-ho against us who are not vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to take the vaccination, you made up your mind to take it, right?
Yes.
That was your choice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, don't try to pull us into it. We decide that we will not take the vaccination.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And I think that we ought to just be honest and allow persons to make up their own minds,
mm-hmm.
and start trying to put pressure on persons who do not see the vaccination as something that is good for them,
yeah.
and allow them to, in their own time, make up their minds and take the vaccination.
Let me play devil's advocate here. So I believe in personal choice. I think personal choice is important. The question really is, how much does personal choice matter when your choices affect your community? So take, for example...
Yeah, but your choices affect the community as well.
One second.
But they haven't taken the vaccine.
One second.
You guys can still spread the vaccine.
The virus. So here's the thing, right? And I'm just playing devil's advocate. I used to be a cigarette smoker when I was in college. I quit some time ago. But, for example, in places around the world, and perhaps in some places here in Nassau, if you are not a smoker, you don't want somebody in an enclosed space smoking cigarettes, right? We know that even though I smoke cigarettes and it harms me, my cigarette smoke affects other people, and secondhand smoke can be almost just as dangerous. So we eliminate your choice to smoke inside, right? So I guess my question is, how far does the personal choice argument, or should the personal choice argument go? I'm just curious.
Well, I don't think that you can in this context,
mm-hmm.
I don't think that you can and should impose upon the person to make such a choice as this, all right?
Mm-hmm.
This is a serious choice, and it is one that I may think affects me adversely.
Mm-hmm.
You may think that it may do you good,
mm-hmm.
all right? So I don't think for 1 minute we should pressure those who choose not to make this decision.
Yeah, even if not making the decision affects the healthcare system, affects the people around you, affects immunocompromised folks, if that's the case.
But you made the decision to take it, and still you can affect others.
Yeah, but the rate, my ability to affect, the degree to which I can affect people is greatly reduced, given what we see from the research evidence. So what I'm just asking the question: if my ability to affect other people negatively is greatly reduced because I've done this,
and why should people be forced to take this when this is something that is not even properly proven yet. I talk to people all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Some persons who have taken this vaccination said that how they have been affected adversely. And then, come on, man. You can't just push this on people.
Okay. I hear you, caller.
Okay.
Thank you very much. All right, guys. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, I've got the team from the Ministry of Financial Services, Trade, and Industry on the line with me. They will be talking about, again, one of those industries that, despite the pandemic, has been really, really resilient. We don't talk about it enough. We're always talking about tourism. So I want to give these directors, these leaders in the public sector, an opportunity to talk about the great thing in their ministry when we come back after this break. Thank you guys very much.
Summer is heating up, and Burger King Nassau is bringing the flavor. Introducing our all-new take on a classic chicken sandwich, the Barbecue Swiss Crispy King. Our new sandwich is full of smoky and tangy flavor and features our crispy chicken patty with tangy chipotle sauce, onion rings, bacon, Swiss cheese, lettuce, and tomato, plus a smoky barbecue sauce on a soft potato bun. The new Barbecue Swiss Crispy King chicken sandwich with fries and a Pepsi is a summer treat you will love to eat, but only available for a limited time, and only at Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
Many people wonder, what makes Boost Academy unique? Maybe it's our 8-to-1 student-staff ratio, the emphasis we place on student individuality, our focus on numeracy, literacy, and creating better citizens by sharpening students' critical thinking skills. One of our many talented teachers, program facilitators, and mentors, or just maybe it is our commitment to taking full responsibility for your child's education, no hidden fees or costs. Regardless of what it is, let us help your child reach their full potential. Boost Academy is currently enrolling students of grades 4 through 12. Visit www.boostbahamas.com to apply now.
Throughout our lifetime, we must all make decisions. No matter how we choose, the right one just needs to be made. Like having J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers as your insurance partner. We've been serving the Bahamas for over 100 years. Whether you need home, motor, marine, or commercial insurance, make the right decision. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com.
J.S. Johnson Insurance.
Good afternoon, and we are back on The Revolution. My name is Joey Gaskins. I am sitting in for Juan McCartney, who is hopefully enjoying a well-deserved vacation. We're pivoting the conversation a bit. We had a hot conversation in the first segment about the question of vaccinations around the healthcare infrastructure here in the Bahamas and how people are feeling where we are at in this fight. One of the things that I think is really key is for us to understand that the pandemic is not just a health crisis, it's also created in certain ways an economic crisis. This is really important too. I don't know, my business partner was on one show last week, I believe it was, and Wale Ramming, some numbers from the firm that we own, Open Current, that does research and insights, public opinion research came out from Seabreeze and St. Barnabas. Those numbers told us that a top three issues in these constituencies for people in these constituencies are job opportunities and employment opportunities, economic growth and economic development, and healthcare. Those first two are really important, I think. And again, you know, COVID has had an adverse effect on both job growth and economic growth, on both employment opportunities and economic opportunities. We have talked about what this means for tourism, an industry that literally was brought to a standstill. I mean, I remember the Minister of Tourism going to Parliament and saying, there is no tourism. I think that's the first time we would have ever heard a Minister of Tourism go into Parliament. And they made a decision to shut the tourism industry down. I think the right decision, given the global health crisis we were facing. I flew back in yesterday, and it is clear to me that tourism is back up and running, perhaps not to 2019 levels, but the airport was packed, right? And everyone's celebrating this kind of return. But there's one industry, a financial services industry, that kept on ticking throughout the course of the pandemic. And it is something that we have an entire ministry focused on, right? An entire department does this work. And there's a lot of good stuff happening in that ministry. I wanted to take a moment to talk about in financial services. What is happening with trade, international trade, as economies open up? What is happening with alternative resolution dispute? Something that we've been talking about for a decade or two decades in the Bahamas and getting up and running, making the Bahamas an international center for this kind of work. And so I've asked my good friends from the Ministry of Financial Services, Trade and Industry to come on with me and to talk a little bit about what's going on in that ministry. We have the Director of Financial Services, Ms. Deborah Watson. We have the Director of Trade and Industry, Ms. Raquel Pinder. And we have a special consultant in the ministry focused on alternative dispute resolution, Ms. Theomonique Nottage. Good afternoon, ladies. How are y'all doing?
Good afternoon, Joey. I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Director Pinder, you on as well?
Yes. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good, good, good. So one of the things that I've realized working in financial services is that this is an industry, and even the public sector work is led quite a bit by. I want to first, you know, each of you to introduce yourselves, starting with Director Watson. Talk a little bit about your background and how you came to be where you are right now. Director Watson, kick us off.
Yes. Good afternoon, Mr. Gaskin and the Revolution. Good afternoon, Bahamas. My name is Debbie Watson. It's a pleasure to be here and represent the Ministry of Financial Services. I am a 30-year financial services professional, having worked in the industry prior to university. And in 1998, on behalf of shareholders, started a bank and group of companies that I managed successfully for 20 plus years. Wow. It's a pleasure to state that at this stage, I've now worked in both private and public industries, and I'm happy here today to provide some insights on behalf of our permanent secretary, Ms. Janice Miller, and of course, our lead in the ministry, Minister, the Honorable Ellsworth Johnson. Good afternoon.
Great. Thank you, Director Watson. Director Pinder, give us a little introduction. Tell us about yourself.
My name is Raquel Pinder. I'm a career public servant, having worked mainly in the Ministry of Agriculture and Marine Resources. Mm-hmm. As the chief economist dealing with policy and planning matters, and a short stint in the Ministry of Finance, also dealing with international trade.
Great. So, thanks, Director Pinder. And Ms. Nottage?
Thank you, Joey. So my name is Dominique Nottage. I am a counsel and attorney at law. I've only been with the ministry just under a year now. I think next week will be my one-year anniversary with the ministry. But before that, I was in private practice, working in the litigation practice group of a Tier 1 commercial law firm. And before that, I was at the AG's office. I've always been interested in alternative dispute resolution, and I have a specialized master's of law degree in the area. And I've just been working, trying to get what we up and running. And as you said, it's been going on for the past 2 decades. Yeah. And I think we've made a lot of progress in the last year, and I'm looking forward to discussing that a little bit more when the time comes.
Right.
So thank you again for having me.
Great. So, I mean, you guys were on the line while I was trying to manage the COVID-19 conversation that we started off with. It's obviously, you know, really a key part of what we're discussing at the kitchen table, in boardrooms, you know, around ministries and within government agencies. It is really kind of sucking all the oxygen out of the room. And one of the ways that I introduced this topic is to say that in a lot of ways, the work that you guys do in the ministry continued forward even in COVID-19. And in some ways, I guess, and perhaps it's a bit inappropriate to say, but in some ways may have benefited the industries or sectors in which you work. So I want each of you to talk a little bit about what kind of impact COVID-19 has had, whether that is in financial services, on ADR, or on trade and industry. And Director Pinder, when we get to you, is to talk about, you know, how trade may be. I think people think about goods when they think about trade mostly, you know, manufacturing. But there's an opportunity to talk about trade and services as well, which I think really benefit Bahamian. So starting with you again, Director Watson, how has COVID-19 impacted the financial services industry from your perspective?
Okay, thank you so much, Joey. So the Ministry of Financial Services, Trade, Industry, we have an extension to that, immigration,
yes.
And we'll tie that in a little bit more, is the entity responsible for providing vision, strategic direction, policy, and information related to the movement of financial resources, goods, and people. Our priorities are to protect, to promote, and grow financial services, and my colleagues will also expand on their various departments as well. But our overall goal is to see how we can tie our various departments into expanding our economy and creating job employment Bahamians at large. During the pandemic, I'm new to the ministry as well. I will tell you that I started in March and 10 days after the country was in complete lockdown. So I think we can start with that being the beginning of my tenure in financial services. During that time, we used that as an opportunity to really kind of determine where we are, what financial services means, and how it supports our economy. As you know, we are the second industry in the Bahamas. We employ about 9,000 professionals inside this industry. They expand across the gamut of broker-dealers, bankers, private bankers, custodial services, corporate services, transfer agencies, financial technology, fintech, lawyers, estate practitioners, I would say aviation and maritime, real estate, insurance. We cross a number of different components that combine and make us. So when we look at financial services, there are a number of moving parts. And as such, each of those sectors were impacted differently due to COVID-19. So it's a big picture that we're looking at, if we say financial services, but it's big in terms that it contributes to 15 to 20% of our GDP. What happened during COVID, we use that as an opportunity to build our resources and to definitely increase our creative energies, our innovation, our think tank, and to bring all stakeholders to the table to say, this is where we are, how are we impacted, what will we do, and how will we move forward? Mm-hmm. We broke that up into four components. Our biggest strength that we have found in industry has been our collaboration across the sector. Mm-hmm. This involves bringing participants in the sector together, our regulators, which includes, we do extensive work across the ministerial and agencies. So this would include entities like the Attorney General, working directly with Senator Carl Bethel, QC, working with Senator Kwesi Thompson in the Ministry of Finance. Yeah. Working directly with the Financial Secretary, Mr. Marlon Johnson, working directly with Mr. Stephen Coakley, our policy and tax lead person in the entity, in creating and working through the various items that are essential for financial services. Mm-hmm. We have a number of what we call our greatest strength, really, is our collaborative efforts with industry participants. Mm-hmm. For example, Bahamas Financial Services, led by CEO Tanya McCartney, mm-hmm. they're responsible for the promotion and marketing of the Bahamas as an international financial center. They do an enormous job of ensuring that the Bahamas is ever present and that people view the services that the Bahamas office offers as a place where they can work, live, and play. We have our regulatory bodies, again, our industry, during the wait period of COVID, and look to determine what was needed, what aspects were hampering financial services, and what we can do to pivot forward. One of the things that we did is determine that the ease of doing business might have been an impairment for us, and the industry took that, and we were able to create tremendous achievements in achieving our legislative agenda, which is a compendium of bills, including amendments to the Companies Act, Foundations Act, International Business Company Act, Property, the Execution and Deed Acts, and the Rules Against Perpetuities.
Yeah.
These items were used to ensure that the ease of doing business are done at a legislative and regulatory level. We also brought together other entities that are really, really important in expanding the economy and job opportunities. We work strategically with the Chamber of Commerce, and Ms. Pinder will share more about that. We work exceptionally well with Securities Commission, and they have been instrumental to the forefront in introducing legislation like the DARE Act 2020 that will result in how we manage and a new job opportunity too for Bahamians in financial technology
and fintech,
how that area, and we'll expand some more about that, Joey. I'm sure you will have questions
on
that.
Of course.
But it's important to know that there are job opportunities, and our job is to educate and promote and highlight these areas of improvements and expansion to the public at large, and ensuring that our second industry is highlighted. We remain cutting edge as an international financial center, but above all, as a regional leader. Mm-hmm. I'll take a little break for there and give somebody
Thanks,
else
Director.
An opportunity.
That was a detailed explanation. And one, you know, I think a lot of people, the Ministry of Financial Services, Trade, Industry, and Immigration seems like a lot. But I think your introduction helps people to understand how those things are all integrated. The movement of financial resources, goods, services, and for the benefit of the Bahamas, I think is key. You know, one of the things.
But can I also say, Joey, that it's not only those entities. So we're talking about working as well with all regulators.
Yes, yeah.
That includes the Central Bank of mm-hmm. the Bahamas, Securities Commission, Compliance yeah. Commission, Insurance Commission. Mm-hmm. So just to put it in perspective, that there are many components, many sectors that yeah. make up the industry.
Absolutely.
We work with the Ministry. Inland Revenue mm-hmm. Service, but Inland Revenue Service, we work with University of the Bahamas. Yeah. We work with the Bahamas Development Bank on a local level. So mm-hmm. there are many components, many players that perform our overall stakeholder participation in the industry.
Yeah. And the ministry acts as kind of a bridge, right, between those various agencies, those external partners and stakeholders. And I think that that's, again, really, I think people generally think of financial services as banks, right? I think from here, you get a good sense that it has a lot to do, that the tentacles of the sector, the industry, stretches out across the economy and is really important.
Absolutely.
Really important. I want to get Director Pinder to jump in here because I think one of the things that we experienced during COVID-19 is the breakdown in some instances of value chains, of trade routes. We are in this moment experiencing, and some people would say, inflation in the cost of things because, it's more difficult to get goods to places in the current atmosphere and the current public health climate. So, Director Pinder, talk a little bit about, how COVID-19 is impacting trade and industry from your perspective as a director, and also what you've been up to during this time to help create opportunity for Bahamian businesses and individuals within trade and industry.
Thank you. I think that your introduction that the COVID-19 pandemic is disruptive to persons involved in trading goods because of the breakage in value chains for goods that have to be transported via sea or air, but has presented an enormous opportunity for trade and services, which means that those are the products, the services that can be transported without people moving. So business services and also services related to goods trade. But let me just briefly go over some of the things that we did as a result of the pandemic. And in response to the disruption that was caused through low work weeks or people losing jobs, we partnered with the Ministry of Finance and the Ministry of Agriculture to put on a webinar on the incentives that were available to people who are in their own businesses, whether at a micro industrial level or fully industrial. And there's quite a lot of interest in people who are interested in from food processing to baking bread to making jewelry, who wanted to get into those businesses or who also expanded those businesses during the pandemic. We also registered new businesses under the Industries Encouragement Act, which we're responsible for. One of those businesses was Blue Terra that makes the biodegradable straws. Mm-hmm. And we think that moving forward, we would like to see many more businesses that are interested in making that connection between the blue and the green economy and industrialization to become registered under the Industries Encouragement Act. On the trade side, like I said, an opportunity. And the Bahamas is particularly well placed because in terms of the world, we have one of the highest levels of internet in connectedness. And this has been the way that a lot of services are being delivered in this COVID environment. It is through the internet. Mm-hmm. So we have partnered with the Chamber of Commerce and some of the other business groups to really try and look at what our strengths are to integrate ourselves into the services value chains of the world. So whether that is providing professional services through the internet, business services, storing personal data. Of course, we have seen that a lot of the banking services are now taking place over the internet. Mm-hmm. So the main thrust of what we are doing now is trying to develop a trade policy that will set the direction for trade and services over the next 5 years. And I think this pivots into what Ms. Nottage is going to talk about, because arbitration and setting up the Bahamas as a commercial arbitration center is really expanding our offering with respect to
trade and services.
Mm-hmm. But before we go to Ms. Nottage, I just want to, so you said that one of the reasons why the Bahamas is really well positioned for, you know, for leveraging trade and services in this moment where, you know, services across borders, or people are really looking for services across borders. They can't fly in here. They may not want to travel. They may be looking for cheaper or more convenient services elsewhere than in their home country. Are you saying that if Bahamians have internet, that there is an opportunity for them to engage in a global economy through the trade and services? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes, definitely. We're seeing it. Many of the small businesses are actually establishing e-commerce sites to sell jewelry, to mm-hmm. sell handbags.
Yeah, we're going to take a quick break. Sorry about the abrupt cut, but we will be right back. Sorry, Director Pinder. We'll be right back after break with Director Pinder finishing her thought, and then with the Yamini Nottage on ADR and how we can take advantage of what we have currently, trade and industry and financial services and ADR during the pandemic. We'll be back after this break.
It's Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas. This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good afternoon. We are back at the Revolution. My name is Joey Gaskins. I am sitting in for Juan McCartney, who again is on vacation. And we have with us today the team from the Ministry of Financial Services, Trade, and Industry. There's immigration as well. I think that deserves an entirely different show. That not because they're not related, but because there's so much to talk about there. And we had an internet issue. We dropped Director Pinder, but she was in the middle of answering a question, which I think is really important. And that is, you know, Director Pinder said in her introduction about the work that they're doing at the ministry that one of the reasons why the Bahamas can take advantage of trade during the COVID-19 moment, during this pandemic, is because we've got huge internet penetration here in the Bahamas, that a lot of us have internet either through mobile or, in our homes. And I was trying to get an understanding of what that could mean for Bahamians on the ground. So, Director Pinder, I just want to invite you to go back to that thought and finish that for us. What does that mean for Bahamians?
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. What the COVID pandemic has done is that many of the business transactions that may have happened face-to-face or from people moving from one place to another to provide the service or consume the service, our business model has now changed where many services are now being provided over the internet. We have seen that shift in education, where you can now go online and learn almost anything. Mm-hmm. But it's also happening in services like professional services mm-hmm. with businesses. So lawyers are now transacting business over the internet. We talked about e-commerce. Mm-hmm. A lot of those transactions are happening over the internet. Mm-hmm. So similar to the way that goods can be started in one country, value added in another country, and then move on to a third country. What we are seeking to do is look at opportunities for the Bahamas to become integrated in global value chains for the provision of services, whether affiliated with business. Director Watson talked a little bit about financial services, or whether it's being a base for services to be provided to other countries. Mm-hmm. And like I indicated, and another opportunity is this whole growing market of cultural services.
Orange economy.
Huge growth, yes. Mm-hmm. Interest in cultural services, whether it be music, literature, art. So there's a lot of opportunity for small micro enterprises to become involved in services, but there are also opportunities for us to carve out a niche for ourselves in providing some of these services globally.
That's great.
And we are really one of the main focuses of our work is really to look at developing a policy document and strategy on where the opportunities are globally for us to become providers of services, given our internet penetration, the ability, capabilities of our workforce, mm-hmm. Where are the opportunities for us? Because one of the jobs of a policy unit, one of the jobs of the government is really to provide the platform for the next generation. Mm-hmm. Where is the world headed? And we see that it's definitely services. There's potential in the sea. And really, our job is to really bring all of these different areas together and to develop a comprehensive strategy in consultation with stakeholders as to where we see ourselves in the next 5 to 10 years.
And I want to get back to that because I think that that is really key. And we know that the next 5 to 10 years is going to be affected by the moment that we're currently in. That provision of services across borders, though, is really important. I want to pivot to Theomonique Nottage, because ADR is one of those services, right? And correct me if I'm wrong, ADR is one of those things that we can, alternative dispute resolution, it's one of those things that we can take advantage of even now through the provision of services cross-border via the internet. So Theomonique, this is something that I also feel like people have been hearing about, like I said, for 20 years. We should be doing 3 years or so. There's a really intense effort. There's a, you know, a very loud conversation, and then nobody knows what happens next. Tell me a little bit about what you've been doing to bring ADR to the forefront and to really develop something that's been talked about for quite some time.
Thanks, Joey. So first of all, just for the listeners out there who are not familiar with ADR, alternative dispute resolution is just a method or a procedure to resolve disputes outside of the court system, so outside of litigation. Mm-hmm. It usually includes negotiation, mediation, arbitration, and construction adjudication. So as you rightly pointed out, the ministry, the government, they have been working towards establishing the Bahamas as an international arbitration center for the last 2 decades. And it's not to say that nothing has been done. The government has done things. You have the Arbitration Act of 2009, which updated centuries-old legislation. It's closely modeled to the 1996 English Arbitration Act and the Ottawa Model Law. And then we also have the incorporation of the New York Convention by virtue of the Foreign Arbitral. Those pieces of legislation have been small steps towards establishing, you know, the Bahamas as an international center for arbitration. But obviously, there's more that needs to be done. So what I have been doing for the last year is revising the legislative framework that supports alternative dispute resolution in the Bahamas. So first of all, we're going to have two separate regimes. It's going to be international arbitration separate from domestic arbitration. Right now, the Arbitration Act 2009 covers both, but what we would want to do is incorporate the Ottawa Model Law on international commercial arbitration, which is considered to be the international gold standard. Mm. So once the Bahamas becomes on such a model law jurisdiction, we start to become even more attractive to international users of arbitration. And by becoming more attractive, we're complementing our geographic location, our stable judiciary, the respect for the rule of law, and we're also going to be complementing other industries, specifically those in financial services and those associated with trade industry. You would find that in trade, a lot of times when there's a dispute, the dispute is resolved by arbitration ultimately, at least under the international trade system.
Right.
With financial services, there are things that we're doing to complement financial services even further, which I'm going to get to in a bit. So my primary focus over the last year has been to update the 2018 bill that was laid in November 2018, which incorporates the Entrepreneurial Model Law. So I've had a very collaborative approach with industry, and that has been already been mentioned by Director Watson and Director Pinder. The ministry always collaborates with its strategic partners. So there have been many meetings with different organizations that represent industry stakeholders to get to the point where we are with the 2018 bill. The 2018 bill is now with the Law Reform and Revision Commission, and they're making the final amendments, and we're hopeful that that act is going to be passed before the end of the year. Besides the Entrepreneurial Model Law being incorporated, we're also looking to make amendments to the 2009 Arbitration Act. The 2009 Arbitration Act is going to be amended to be a domestic arbitration legislation, and that's going to also support trust arbitration. So now already we have in the Trustee Amendment Act 2011 provisions to support trust arbitration. We're going to incorporate certain aspects of that. And this, again, is in its early stages. We've had initial meetings with the AD Cooper Rosau. We've had an informational session with the STEP Bahamas team. And we've also met with Queen's Counsel out of the UK, who previously drafted provisions of the Trustee Amendment Act 2011. So we're looking to finalize that over the next few weeks so we can also move to have that act, and this is the 2009 act, updated to complement the international act that will incorporate the Entrepreneurial Model Law. So those two pieces of legislation are going to work together to support arbitration in the Bahamas. And it can be any type of arbitration. It can be commercial arbitration, maritime arbitration, trust arbitration. There are various types of arbitration, but the whole thrust of it is to make sure that the Bahamas is going to be a leader in this space, not only in the region, but also internationally.
Got it.
Besides arbitration, what we're focusing on, and, you know, part of the thrust of why arbitration is at the forefront is because in some popular arbitral seats, such as London, it is estimated to be a $40 to $50 billion industry.
Wow.
It doesn't only support, you know, the legal profession, it supports other service industries. So this is what the Bahamas is working towards. Again, it has been going on for 20 years, and we keep trying to emphasize to industry and to the Bahamian public that this is a marathon. It's not a sprint. It's something that's going to take time because we have to build the reputation. But the good thing about this current pandemic is now that we have the opportunity to build the relevant legislation again for business and you know, not conduct remote hearings. They will be able to come to the Bahamas and have an arbitration matter heard. And in coming to the Bahamas, obviously, they're going to be using services.
So listen. Before you go on, Theomini, that's great. I just want to put the call lines out in case people want to ask you guys questions, right? 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, or you can text me at 422-GR96. Theomini, you want to finish that thought?
Sure. I just was going to move on from arbitration to discuss the other pieces of legislation that we're working on that fall under alternative dispute resolution. So we're also working on the International Mediation Bill, which is going to incorporate the Singapore Convention on Mediation. And what the Singapore Convention on Mediation does, it enables mediated dispute settlements to be enforced in the courts in the same manner that an unconvention and the Foreign Arbitral Awards Act of 2009, and in the same way that foreign judgments can be enforced in Bahamian courts. So that's going to be a game changer, because even though arbitration has been quite popular for a while, we have found that the international business community is starting to move more towards mediation as their preferred method of alternative dispute resolution. And sometimes that's actually done in conjunction with arbitration. So that international mediation bill is going to further enhance the Bahamas' reputation as a center for international dispute settlement. We're also going to be introducing a domestic mediation bill to support domestic mediations. And we're trying to encourage lawyers and businesses to engage in mediation as opposed to going through the court system. I did indicate before that previous to coming to the ministry, I worked in private practice and litigation. And I can tell you that the court's calendar is completely overbooked.
especially on the civil side, right? I feel like it takes forever to move on the civil side of the courts, yeah?
I had a colleague tell me that he had a court date for trial in 2024, and we're in 2021.
Yeah.
That's not good business. That doesn't help the client very much. So if we can encourage people to move outside of the court system and to work in the arbitration and mediation space to resolve their disputes, we're going to be looking a lot more attractive to the global business community.
Right.
So besides the international mediation bill, the domestic mediation bill, and we're going to be doing a webinar coming up on that shortly with the ADR committee of the Bahamas Bar Association. The save the date on that should be going out today or next week, but that's coming up.
Great.
And we're also going to be introducing construction adjudication, which has been, kind of a talk for a while in the construction industry in the Bahamas. There's a draft bill that we have also supplied us by our industry stakeholders, which we're going to be benchmarking and revising against the 2016 Contractors Act just to make sure everything is consistent. And we are really looking forward to getting that off the ground, because that's going to further enhance the construction industry in the Bahamas and, again, make us more attractive to people who want to come in and construct things. And independent of those things, going back to arbitration.
A lot going on.
There's a lot going on.
Go ahead.
I'm very excited about it.
Yes,
too.
Yeah.
So we also are going to be looking at certain aspects of investment protection legislation, because in the investment space, a lot of the disputes there are resolved by investment arbitration. This is an area that complements nearly every industry that you can think of. So it's a big deal for the Bahamas to establish itself as a center and to move towards it. So what we've been doing in the last 11 months since I came to the ministry, we established an ADR unit in the ministry.
Got it.
So the first thing we did, we sat down, we went through all of the documents and files, and we created a two-year strategic plan of what we're going to be doing quarter by quarter over the next 2 years. Now, some of the plan is not working out how we, first envision it, but we're rolling with the punches and we're keeping, the work up to get these things done by the end of 2021.
Yep.
Specifically, the enactment of the two pieces of legislation related to arbitration that I previously mentioned.
Got it.
We also had a webinar at the beginning of this year. And that webinar was quite well attended. We had really positive feedback. We collaborated with several of our strategic partners. We had speakers from the Bar Association, the Bahamas Chamber of Commerce. We also had international speakers. We had Professor Lucy Stellis from Queen Mary University of London and Professor Lucy Reed, who is the president of the International Council for Commercial Arbitration. And they were talking about the educational opportunities for Bahamians to get training in this space, so that when we do open up as a center, that Bahamians have the opportunities to act as arbitrators, to act as arbitration counsel, to act as mediators, etc. We also got approval from the cabinet to appoint members of the Permanent Court of Arbitration, and that is to further strengthen our relationship with the Permanent Court of Arbitration. We only became a member of that organization in 2016, and it's important for us to strengthen that relationship because aspects of the International Commercial Arbitration Bill involve the Permanent Court of Arbitration as an appointing authority. So that is important for us to make sure that we strengthen the relationship and make sure that Bahamians are members of court for when the time comes for an arbitration matter that, you know, may be referred to that court, that Bahamians are on that list who can be considered as arbitrators. And we are also revamping what which was formerly the International Commercial Arbitration Executive Council. We've revamped it to the Alternative Dispute Resolution Council. And that's going to be a public-private partnership. So you're going to have representatives from the Bar Association, from the Chamber of Commerce, from the Ministry of Education, from private practice and industry, who are all going to come together and help to support the ministry in advancing its mandate to establish the Bahamas as a center for international dispute resolution. We've also continued, and again, this has been a very important reference, overarching theme of the ministry is collaboration.
Yeah.
We're not really doing anything without the input of our industry stakeholders. So when these pieces of legislation go to public consultation, we are confident that we have the support of our industry behind us.
Yep.
So a lot has happened in the last 11 months, and a lot more is scheduled to happen in the next quarter, the final quarter of this year. So it's all things that have been on the back burner and have been in the background for a long time for the government, but it's just coming to fruition now. So it's going to be a lot of good things to look forward to for the Bahamian public.
This is great. I mean, you know, obviously a comprehensive, extensive look at everything going on in the Ministry of Financial Services, Trade and Industry, which also includes immigration. I got a text message here asking, how do you become an arbitrator? And I actually think that this is an open question for all of the directors on the line and is, you know, we talk about all the things that's happening in the ministry. How do Bahamians go about taking advantage of the opportunities being built? Think about that for a second. We have a caller on the line, actually, and I want to go to that. Hi, caller, you are live on The Revolution. Go for it.
Yes, thank you, sir. Good afternoon, and good afternoon to your guests.
Good afternoon.
I must admit that sounds very intellectual, scholarly.
Mm-hmm.
So I have what may be a little difficult question. I want to know if the department, that's financial services, is also connected to the Ministry of Finance.
I'm sure Director Watson can ask, but those are two different entities. They work with each other, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. My question is the system that we have here in the Bahamas of promotions and directorship and all these things, is it sustainable, especially with our downturn in finances, you know, especially being a touristic economy and we have a heavy blow from COVID? Is it sustainable for us to have the public service being a large employer and paying out salaries and so on? Is it sustainable, and for how long could that remain?
Mm-hmm. All right, thanks, caller. That's an interesting question. I think probably better for the Ministry of Finance, who runs all the numbers. But I want to go back to my original question, which was, you know, we've got a director of financial.
Joey, sorry for the interruption. Just to clarify and expand on that, you're absolutely correct.
Yeah.
It would be the Ministry of Finance that actually leads the charge in terms of the employment and the level of employment in the public sector. But I just wanted to also add that the Ministry of Financial Services, as with other governmental agencies, we are all, as Ms. Nottage would have indicated, it is a push for the government to collaborate. Mm-hmm. And in collaboration, we will find that government is exercising economies of scales. Mm-hmm. So in terms of doing things in pockets and silos,
yeah,
ministries and agencies are combining and pooling their resources to ensure that we get as much, in a colloquial term, bang for our buck.
Mm-hmm.
So when we say that collaboration is our strongest strategic strength, it really is.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we know, why the Bahamas? Why us? And that is really important. So from a tourism standpoint, yes, we sell the Bahamas in terms of sun, sand, and sea.
Yeah.
From financial services aspect, Why the Bahamas? Well, the Bahamas is a favorable location for 65 value propositions. Mm-hmm. We, as Director Pinder indicated, we have great infrastructure. We have easy access to all major financial markets, to Canada, South America. We have 21 we can get to 21 international airports, and we're easily accessible, but above all, we have professionals not only in financial services, but we have highly educated professionals all across the various sectors of our economy. Mm-hmm. And the lifestyle that people would love to endure, say in Europe or elsewhere, well, it's 65 miles off the coast of Florida and you can get it here. But what I wanted to also add really the point that we're driving when he says sustainability and how we can afford it. This collaboration ensures that when ministries and agencies speak, they're speaking with a collective voice. We've done in the COVID, we used that as an opportunity to sit down, to hunker down, to use innovation, technology, and digitalization to come to the same virtual table.
Yeah.
In so doing, we were able, I can speak for financial services, and it's the same for my other colleagues on the call. For example, our key strategic partner in marketing and promotion is BFSB.
Yeah.
Along with BFSB, it's AIB. That's the Association of International Banks and Trust Company, led by Bruno Roberts and Mr. Ivan Hooper. That entity, again, is responsible for putting together the collective voice of stakeholders. And what we were able to do with those entities, with STEP, led by state practitioners, led by Theo Burrows and Anita Bain, or with our broker association, led by Mr. Andrew Rowe, what we were able to do is, across the entire spectrum, have everyone sit to that virtual table saying, these are the things that are important. These are the things that we need to be working on. In 2016, a strategic study was done on the Bahamas as an international financial center led by BFSB and conducted by E&Y. And it created a roadmap going into the future. Of course, 2020 took place and COVID
changed the game.
The sales out of everybody's right?
Yeah.
So what we did strategically with our regulators, with BFSB and the Ministry of Financial Services, the Attorney General's Office, our central bank leader, Mr. John Roll, Securities Commission, Compliance Commission, and Insurance Commission, along with CEOs and business owners, we created something called the 2021 International Financial Service Virtual Policy Action Summit. The communication strategy will be rolled out, but we were able to determine what were the key drivers and the key concerns for financial services. We were able to benchmark where the Bahamas is and where we stand up against our competition. And pleasantly surprised, we know our game. We knew it was important before. Adjustments had to be made through benchmarking and various other initiatives. But it's the structure is still the same.
Yes.
The Bahamas is an entity that people want to work, live, and play. And we provide the regulation. We provide the best location. We have sun, sand, and sea, and a whole lot more. We have trained professionals. We have regulations. We have a political climate. We really have a firm foundation to take our second industry to the next level, but to expand it and create job opportunities for Bahamians. Another way we did that, Joey, was that we conducted something called, and out of the DARE Act from Securities Commission, and I'm going to invite our audience today. This is a huge opportunity in financial technology and expanding those persons interested in that particular aspect of business. The DARE Act, the Digital Assets and Registered Exchange 2020 Act, it's a piece of legislation designed for the regularization of digital tokens and assets. The Securities Commission, I invite you to their website to look at the FinTech, Christina Rowe, the CEO, and Mr. Christian Adley, chief policy maker there. You will find a lot of information on financial technologies available for it and how we can expand our economy and the product that the Bahamas offers. Our ministry conducted a virtual symposium. We've done a number of them, as Ms. Nottage and Ms. Director Pinder indicated, mm-hmm. but really our job is to ensure that we educate and we update stakeholders on the relevant items in financial services and to work collaboratively with participants in the industry to ensure that we get this information out. And just one last thing before I go, we haven't forgotten our students as well. So we do have a summer program going on virtually.
Oh, really?
But I just wanted to say with AIBT, with the Association of International Banks and Trust Companies, we have worked with them over the number of years as a leading sponsor to ensure that students coming through the University of the Bahamas are exposed to the various facets of financial services. And we place those students along with AIBT in various organizations so that they can have hands-on experience and exposure to the industry, and their studies and, you know, could lead them in a direction and add value to the overall financial services sector.
So clearly a lot going on. You've heard the full gamut of what's happening in the ministry. We have another caller on the line. Let's go to the line. Head caller, you're live. This is Revolution. Go for it.
Good afternoon. Can I get on the Revolution?
It is. It is the Revolution. You're on.
Okay.
You're on radio.
I'm on.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. I was listening to the lady, the guest. Thank you very much for your guest. My name is Robert Farquharson from the National Tribal Council. Very interesting show concerning ADR.
Mm-hmm.
I heard about, I'm quite aware and up to date on the legislative framework for ADR that has been established in the Bahamas. This is a very sound one. I heard some amendments are coming relative to the domestic side. I want to find out from the other any considerations for the industrial relations side of ADR, the alternative dispute resolution for industrial relations. We have a court system that is overwhelmed. We have a tribunal system that's overwhelmed. And we want to put in place a system between when a trade dispute leaves to conciliation before it gets to court, if it can be resolved by ADR. And I want to find out if any consideration has been given to that aspect of ADR.
Theomenique, you want to take that? I think this is a really good question, actually. How broad is this effort going to be? Go for it.
Sure. Thanks, Joey, and thanks, Mr. Farquharson, for that question. For the most part, we've considered that the Arbitration Act is going to be able to support all of the industries, and that's the 2009 Act in relation to domestic arbitration. But if you are asking for specific legislation to support industrial relations, and I would be happy to discuss it with you further next week. I can get your contact information and we can have a meeting because, again, at the ministry, we are about collaboration and we're open to having those types of conversations with our industry stakeholders.
That's great. And I'm sure the listeners are getting the point here. I mean, if you guys say collaboration one more time and people don't get that this ministry has been really focused, its team has been really focused on reaching out to key stakeholders, involving the people who know about these things in industry. That is, I think that, and quite interestingly, if you look at some of the reports that have come out, particularly like the WTO accession report from the Bahamas Chamber of Commerce, one of the key things that they say in there is that industry leaders find it really difficult to understand policy changes when they happen because of the lack of collaboration. It seems like this ministry has taken that on. We have another caller on the line. I want to go to them. Caller, you are live. This is the Revolution. Go for it. Hello, caller.
Yes, sir. Good evening to all.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm all right. You know, I am in the construction industry,
mm-hmm.
right? And, you know, I'm a student of Queens College. So whatever you're saying, I can comprehend. For me to remember everything you say and paraphrase you, be a bit, you know, it takes a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It would take a bit more, right? But my question to you, right, if you were to grow the economy exponentially,
mm-hmm.
you know, my question is who benefits? I mean, that is through the whichever industry, the financial industry, you know, and trade of any type, you know, who benefits?
Mm-hmm.
Is it and what is in it for the workers?
Yeah.
Especially ununionized workers in this country. See, the people, the middle class, the bourgeois, I would say, these are the people that control the legislations in all around the world.
Yeah.
You know, but the workers, you see, the proletariats,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're left holding the bag. You create jobs, but you create slave jobs for them.
Yeah.
You see, so this is the problem I have in this country. See, all the politicians, everybody in the media, everybody comes with all the people in finance, all the professionals, they come on talk shows and they speak to things that benefits them, but never about things that benefits the proletariat. And there's never debate in this country. I've never heard a debate in this country on socialism versus capitalism. What kind of world are we living in? What kind of Bahamas are we living in? There's never debate on economic pros and the cons. I mean, a debate where the balance on two sides, there's a representation on both sides.
So I'm going back into my sociology, political sciences bag. There are questions about the proletariat and the bourgeoisie. I think this goes back to my original question, actually, which was, you know, what should Bahamians be doing right now to take advantage of all the opportunities people, the directors, and are talking about? We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back. But that's the question. How can Bahamians take advantage of what's happening in financial services, what's happening in ADR, and what's happening in trade and industry? We'll get to that right after this break. Stick around.
Spicy. Unlike the other guys, our spicy activates all your senses. For a taste of Wendy's spicy, try the new Chipotle Crunch Cheeseburger made with fresh beef or the new Chipotle Crunch Chicken Sandwich, both with delicious crispy jalapenos, chipotle aioli, cheddar cheese sauce, and much more. Taste the Wendy's spice in every bite of irresistible Chipotle Crunch Chopped Fries too. Stop it today for the flavor you crave. Wendy's, different inside and out.
Tired of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
Loss of family members is very isolating, and people who have experienced loss appreciate when others have shared their grief. If you can't be there in person, go to the Nassau Guardian's website online at thenassauguardian.com and visit our obituary link. The Nassau Guardian's interactive obituary link allows you to read the funeral announcement, express condolences, or place photos on the online guestbook for one full year. Losing a loved one is painful, but that pain isn't the worst thing to happen. Friends, loved ones, colleagues, and neighbors who ignore the loss compound the pain. Should the bereaved family wish to place the obituary and photos, just contact the Guardian's funeral industry partners or the Nassau Guardian. Remember, there isn't one magic right thing to say to someone experiencing loss that will make the loss less painful or easier to bear. The Nassau Guardian's obituary link, available online at thenassauguardian.com.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good afternoon. We are back on The Revolution. This is Joey Gaskin sitting in for Juan McCartney with the team from the Ministry of Financial Services, Trade and Industry, which also includes immigration. On the line, we have Director Debbie Watson, the Director of Financial Services, and Theomonique Nottage, who is a special consultant working on alternative dispute resolution and creating the Bahamas or making the Bahamas into an ADR center. So I kind of took the last caller's questions and flipped it, turned it around, did a Missy Elliott on it, and wanted to ask the question. You know, we're talking about all the things that you are doing. Theomonique had, you know, just a massive amount of work happening in ADR, massive amount of work happening in trade and industry, similarly at financial services, all rooted, anchored in collaborating with its external governments, external and internal stakeholders, which I think is really exciting and perhaps a new approach to doing this kind of work. But what does this mean for Bahamians? Like, you know, we can talk about new legislation. We can talk about, new economic partnership agreements and opportunities around services across borders. How can Bahamians take advantage of these developments? And that's an open question. So anyone that wants to chime in here, go for it. But let's talk a little bit about what this means, all means for Bahamians and how they can take advantage of it.
Joey, if I can start.
Go ahead, Director.
Let's talk from the industry and manufacturing perspective.
Mm-hmm.
The concessions or the opportunities for manufacturers go from manufacturers who are what we would describe as micro enterprises through to those who want to manufacture at a factory level. So one of the feedback that we did get when we reached, did not understand what the concessions were or how they were available.
Mm.
So for very small manufacturers, for that startup or, company that only has one person manufacturing, those concessions are, manufacturing concessions are available under Cottage and Light Industries, which is managed by the Ministry of Finance.
Mm.
If you are a manufacturer that wants to establish a factory premises, no matter where you are in the country, if it's an agricultural product, it is the Ministry of Agriculture. If it's a non-agricultural product, it comes under the Industries Encouragement Act. And we have our entire application process, which is available through our portal, which is on the Ministry of Financial Services, Trade and Industries website. Over the next fiscal period, we will be updating that website to provide some more information for persons who are interested in manufacturing. We did indicate that opportunities to connect manufacturing to the blue economy, which is what's going on the oceans, which is the new frontier, as well as sustainable products. And we mentioned Terra, which is doing the straws. On the services side, again, when we reached out to companies currently and businesses that are operating in services, whether it be providing business services, they all indicated that it's very easy for a company to digest volumes of information and data. But how do you bring this information down to a company where there may be only this owner operated?
Hmm.
So one of the key objectives in the trade strategy is to really provide opportunities or to outline opportunities that are available to what we call independent professionals, as well as those that are scalable up to larger sized companies. So we appreciate that the gamut in of people that want to participate in trade and industry runs from those that are what we call at the micro level, as well as to more established businesses. Mm-hmm. And it is really our objective to make our trade strategy, to make the information that we put out digestible to that entire spectrum.
Got it. I actually have two specific questions around ADR on this question, Ms. Nottage, which I think aligns with what we're talking about right now. You become an arbitrator, and another said, Joey, I did a 2-day course recently online in arbitration and mediation. I passed the exam and received a certificate. I have a master's degree as well. Would I qualify to be a mediator or arbitrator? So, Theomony, tell us a little bit about, you know, what Bahamians need to do to benefit or to become involved in this the work that's happening around creating ADR, an ADR center here in the Bahamas.
Thanks for both of those questions, Joey. So the first thing I want to highlight is that everybody has a different path to becoming an arbitrator. It's not one linear option, right? So you have some people who choose to do the specialized postgraduate degrees, and you have some people who choose to do certification courses. There are people in the Bahamas, in the community, who think that to be an arbitrator, you also have to be an attorney. That's not true. So another thing that we try to highlight is the fact that anyone, any professional can be an arbitrator, right? About party autonomy, and the parties involved in this dispute have the freedom of choice to appoint their arbitrator, and they don't have to, you know, say that it has to be this attorney, it has to be that attorney. It can be anybody, and they set the standard for what kinds of qualifications they want their arbitrators to have.
I had no idea. That was news to me. I really thought you had to be an attorney to be an arbitrator.
No. You have persons in the industry who have arbitration qualifications but aren't attorneys. There's a senior architect, Michael Diggis. He is not a lawyer. He's an architect by profession, but he has qualifications under the Chartered Institute of Arbitrators London. And he is the media pastor of the Far Bahamas branch, and he has sat as arbitrator and has acted in arbitration.
Wow.
Okay. So it's not limited to attorneys. It's literally any professional can you know, act as an arbitrator. I would encourage others who are interested in becoming an arbitrator to seek out qualifications to make themselves more attractive to become arbitrators. Mm-hmm. So in the Bahamas, you have the Chartered Institute of Arbitrators Bahamas branch, and they offer courses in arbitration. So recently in, I think it was March or April of this year, I'm not quite sure, but earlier this year they had introduction to mediation and introduction to arbitration. So when you take these courses, you qualify at different levels of membership under the Chartered Institute of Arbitrators. So for instance, you have people who have associate level membership, then you have people who are known as members of the Chartered Institute of Arbitrators. I'm a member of the Chartered Institute of Arbitrators. Masters of Law program from Queen Mary University of London qualified me for that level of membership. I'm sitting a course later this year to become a fellow. And they also, the Chartered Institute also has courses where you can become a fellow. And they had, I think, 10 new fellows earlier this year. So I think they have 16 Bahamian fellows, which is the highest per capita amount of fellows in this region.
Wow.
So you can contact the CAR Bahamas branch to find out when they're going to be offering courses again to become a bit more educated in what the procedure of arbitration entails. So they do offer courses. And then you also have the option to do a postgraduate program in it, which is obviously the more expensive option.
Right.
But those are the two main options you can use. And sometimes people kind of also just fall into arbitration. You would hear sometimes a lot of the senior practitioners say that they just got into arbitration later in their career. And, you know, it just became a thing for them to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just not an arbitrator and any business professional, accountants, architects, construction professionals, financial services professionals, anybody can be appointed as an arbitrator.
Very cool. I did not know that. We have about 2 minutes left before we close out the show. We have given the Bahamian population a lot of information about what is happening in the ministry, right? What you guys are doing to lead the way to help develop these economic opportunities for Bahamians, things for them to take advantage of that exist already, and things coming down the pipeline. I just want to do a round, starting with Director Watson, and just ask you, how can people get in contact with you or learn more about these things if they've heard something today on the show that piqued their interest? Director Watson, how do you want people to get in contact with you at the ministry or with the ministry if they want more information?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Gaskin. Mr. Gaskin, you can reach us at the Ministry of Financial Services, Trade, Industry, and Immigration at the following www.mofstii.bs.gov. And in conclusion, I just wanted to say, I'll use the words of our minister. He says, and I quote, that the Bahamas is able to punch above our weight class and participate in financial services in both technical aspects and certainly with the professionals that we have. So to put everything in context, we'd just like to say congratulations to our Olympians for making us proud. For most of us, we've won the Bahamas. But for financial services, we want to thank our collaborative stakeholders. Thank you for putting us in the golden and winner circle. And as an industry, we work very, very hard to ensure that that our jurisdiction remains first in class. Thank you.
Director Pinder?
Yes, I'd just like to ditto what Director Watson said. All of our calls this week have started out of talking about how well the Bahamas did at the Olympics, so we were really proud of that. But we have two websites, email addresses on industry matters. Our email is renewalsmfsi@bahamas.gov.bs. And on trade matters, our email is trade@bahamas.gov.bs. And like I said, we will be updating our website over the next coming months, and we definitely look forward to input from stakeholders when we put out the trade policy for consultation in January.
Right.
And again, thank you for this opportunity.
No, thank you, Director. And Theo, how can people get in contact with you?
People can get in contact with me via email. So the email contact for the ADR unit is adr-unit@bahamas.gov.bs. Alternatively, I can be contacted at ignotage@bahamas.gov.bs. So if you need me to spell it for you, theominationotage. As Dr. Pender already indicated, we are updating the website with more content for every facet of the ministry. So please stay tuned to that and other aspects of our social media platforms, as we're going to be updating over the next few months as well, just to make sure that the Bahamian public has full access to what we're doing as a ministry.
Great. Thank you guys so much for being on the show today. That's mofstii.gov.bs. I'm Joey Gaskin sitting in for Juan McCartney. This was The Revolution. Have a great Friday and a great weekend. See you guys next week.
The Revolution of Juan McCartney is sponsored by J.S. Johnson, Burger King, Commonwealth Bank, Boost Academy, and Wendy's.